inside, and Guinevere hesitated. Perhaps she should insist on going at once downstairs, and to business. She could hardly refresh herself or rest well in a room as dirty and neglected as this.
"Not you, old man,"
said Melia Grant, turning suddenly and pushing Ectorius down the stairs hard.
"My lady doesn't need your service now."
Ectorius stumbled off balance, and at that moment Melia Grant pushed her into the room and slammed the door hard behind her. She heard the bar thrown down and stumbled to her knees. By the time she got up, she was alone in the room, and no amount of hammering on the door brought any sound at all. So Morgaine's warning had been right. Had they murdered her escort? Had they killed Ectorius and Lucan? The room where Eleanor had borne her children and lived and later died was cold and dank. There were only some old rags of linen sheets across the great bed, and the straw smelt foul. Eleanor's old carved chest was there, but the wood carving was greasy and smeared with dirt, and it was empty. The hearth was clogged with ash, as if there had been no fresh fire lighted there for years. Guinevere beat on the door and shouted until her hands and her throat were sore. She was hungry and exhausted, and sickened by the smell and the dirt of this place. But she couldn't budge the door, and the window was too small to climb out, and there was a 12-foot drop outside. She was imprisoned. Through the window she could see only a neglected barnyard with a single mouldy-looking cow wandering and bellowing at intervals. The hours dragged by. Guinevere had to accept two things, that she couldn't get out of the room by her own efforts, and that she couldn't attract the attention of any person who would be likely to come and let her out. Her escort was gone, dead or imprisoned, in any case unable to come to her aid. Her waiting woman and page were probably dead, certainly well out of reach. She was here, and alone, the mercy of a man who would probably use her as a hostage to exact some kind of concession from Arthur. Her own person was probably safe from him. As she had pointed out to Morgaine, all his claim rested on the fact that he was the only surviving son of her father. Bastard, but still of the royal blood. However, when she thought of his rapacious grin and huge presence, she was terrified. He might easily abuse her, or try to force her to acknowledge him as regent of this country. The day dragged on. The sun moved slowly from the small crack of window, across the room, and away again. And at last it began to grow dark. Guinevere went through into the little chamber behind Eleanor's that had been her own when she was a child. Once her mother had dwelt in Eleanor's chamber. The dark, confined space, no more than a closet, felt comfortingly secure. Who could hurt her in here? No matter that it was dirty and stale, the bed straw mildewed. She crept into the bed and wrapped herself in her cloak. Then she went back into the outer room and tried to shove Eleanor's heavy carved chest against the door. She had discovered that she was very much afraid of Melia Grant, and even more afraid of his ruffianly men-at-arms. Certainly he wouldn't let them hurt her. The only bargaining power he had was her safety. Arthur would kill him, she told herself. Arthur would kill him if he offered her the slightest insult or harm. But, she asked herself in her misery, would Arthur really care? Although he had been kind and loving to her all these years, and treated her with all honour, still he might not be sorry to be quit of a wife who couldn't bear him a child. A wife who was, furthermore, in love with another man, and couldn't conceal it from him. If I were Arthur, I would make no move against Melia Grant. I would tell him that now he had me, he might keep me, for all the good it would do him. What did Melia Grant want? If she, Guinevere, were dead, there would be no one else with the shadow of a claim on the summer country's throne. There were some young nephews and nieces by her sisters, but they dwelt far away, and probably didn't know or care about this land. Perhaps he simply meant to murder her, or leave her here to starve. The night dragged on. Once she heard some men and horses moving about in the barnyard below. She went to the small window and peered out, but she saw only a dim torch or two, and although she yelled and shouted through her sore throat, no one raised his eyes or took the slightest notice. Once, far into the night, when she had fallen into a brief, nightmare-ridden doze, she started up, thinking she heard Morgaine calling her name. She sat bolt upright on the dirty straw of the bed, staring into the thick darkness. But she was alone. "Morgaine, Morgaine, if you can see me with your sorcery, say to my lord when he comes home that Meleagrand is false, that it was a trap." And then she wondered, would God be angry with her for calling on Morgaine's sorcery to deliver her? And she fell to praying softly, until the monotony of her prayers put her to sleep again. She slept heavily, this time without dreams. And when she woke, her mouth dry, she realized it was full day and she was still prisoner in the empty and filthy apartment. She was hungry and thirsty and sickened with the smell of the place. Not only the stale straw and mould, but the smells from one corner she had had to use as a latrine. How long were they going to leave her here alone? The morning wore away, and Guinevere no longer even had the strength or courage to pray. Was she being punished then for her guilt, for not valuing enough what she had had? She had been a faithful wife to Arthur, yet she had hungered after another man. She had meddled with Morgaine's sorcery. But, she thought in despair, if I'm being punished for my adultery with Lancelot, for what was I being punished while I was yet a faithful wife to Arthur? Even if Morgaine could see with her magic that she was imprisoned, would she trouble to help her? Morgaine had no reason to love her. Indeed, Morgaine almost certainly despised her. Was there anyone who really cared? Why should anyone care what happened to her? It was past noon when at last she heard a step on the stairs. She sprang to her feet, wrapping herself tightly in her cloak, and backed away from the door. It was Meleagrand who came in, and at sight of him she drew back even farther. "Why have you done this to me?" she demanded. "Where is my woman, my page, my chamberlain? What have you done with my escort? Do you think Arthur will allow you to rule this country when you have offered insult to his queen?" "His queen no longer," Meleagrant said quietly. "When I am done with you, he will not have you back. In the old days, lady, the consort of the queen was king of the land, and if I hold you and get sons on you, no man will gainsay my right to rule."
"You'll get no sons from me," Guinevere said with a mirthless laugh. "I am barren."
"You were married to a damned beardless boy," he said,
and added something more which Guinevere didn't completely understand, only that it was unimaginably foul.
"Arthur will kill you," she said.
"Let him try. It's harder than you would think to attack an island," said Meleagrant, "and by that time, perhaps, he will not care to try, since he would have to take you back."
She said, "I cannot marry you. I have a husband."
"No man in my kingdom will care one way or the other," said Meleagrant. "There were many who chafed at the rule of the priests, and I have cast forth every damned priest of them. I rule by the old laws, and I will make myself king by that law, which says your man rules here."
She whispered, "No," and backed away. But he sprang at her and pulled her toward him.
"You're not to my taste," he said brutally. "Skinny, ugly, pale wenches. I like better a woman who's some flesh to her bones. But you're old Leodegrance's daughter, unless your mother had more blood to her than I think she could have had. And so...
He pulled her to him. She struggled, got her arm loose, and struck him hard across the face. He shouted as her elbow struck his nose, grabbed her arm, and shook her hard, then hit her with his clenched fist across the jaw. She felt something snap, and tasted blood bursting in her mouth. He hit her again and again with his fists. She put her arms up, terrified, to ward off his blows, but he went on beating her.
"Now," he yelled, "there'll be no more of that. You'll find out who's your master."
He seized her wrist and wrenched at it. "Oh, no. No, please. Please don't hurt me. Arthur will kill you." He answered her only with an obscenity, wrenched at her wrist, flung her down on the dirty straw of the bed, knelt beside her, hauling at his clothing. She writhed, shrieking. He hit her again, and she lay still, crouched on a corner of the bed.
"Take off your gown," he ordered.
"No," she cried, huddling her clothes about her. He reached out, twisting her wrist, and held her while he ripped her gown deliberately down to the waist.
"Now, will you take it off, or shall I tear off every rag of it?"
Shaking, sobbing, with trembling fingers, Guinevere pulled her gown over her head, knowing that she should fight, but too terrified of his fists and blows to resist. When she had done, he pulled her down, held her down on the dirty straw, pushing her legs open with a rough hand. She struggled only a little, frightened of his hands, sickened by his foul breath, his huge hairy body, the big meaty phallus that thrust painfully into her, pushing and pushing till she felt she would break in two.
"Don't pull away from me like that, damn you," he shouted, thrusting violently.
She cried out with pain, and he hit her again. She lay still, sobbing, and let him do what he would. It seemed to go on forever, his big body straining and pumping on and on, till finally she felt him convulse, thrust agonizingly hard. Then he was gone from her, rolled a little away, and she gasped for breath, struggling to pull her clothes around her. He stood up, wrenching at his belt, and gestured to her. "Won't you let me go?" she begged. "I promise you, I promise you." He grinned fiercely.
"Why should I?" he asked. "No, here you are, and here you'll stay. Is there anything you need? A gown to put in the place of that one?"
She stood weeping, exhausted, shamed, sickened. At last she said shakily, "Can I have some water and something to eat?" "And..." She began to cry harder than ever with shame. "And a chamber pot."
"Whatever my lady desires," said Meleagrant sarcastically,
and went away, locking her in again. Later in the day, a crook-backed old crone brought her some greasy roast meat and a hunk of barley bread and jugs of water and beer. She also brought some blankets and a chamber pot. Guinevere said, "If you will bear a message to my Lord Arthur, I will give you this." And she took the gold comb from her hair. The old woman's face brightened at the look of the gold, but then she looked away, scared, and sidled out of the room. Guinevere burst into tears again. At last she regained some calm, ate and drank, and tried to wash herself a little. She felt sick and sore. But worse than that was the sense of being used, shamed, ineradicably dirtied. Was it true what Meleagrant had said, that Arthur wouldn't have her back now that she had been spoiled beyond redemption? It might be so. If she were a man, she wouldn't want anything Meleagrant had used either. No, but it wasn't fair. This wasn't anything she had done wrong. She had been trapped and tricked, used against her will.
Oh, but it is no more than I deserve. I, who am not a faithful wife, but love another. She felt sick with guilt and shame. But after a time, she began to recover her composure and to consider her predicament. She was here in Meleagrant's castle, her father's old castle. She had been raped and was held captive, and Meleagrant had proclaimed his intention of holding this island kingdom by right of being her consort. It wasn't to be considered that Arthur would let him do so, no matter what he thought of her personally. For his own honour as High King, he would have to make war on Meleagrant. It wouldn't be easy, but it shouldn't be impossible to recapture an island. She knew nothing of Meleagrant as a fighter, except, she thought, with a rare flash of grim humour, against a helpless woman, whom he had beaten into submission. But it wasn't to be considered, either, that he could stand against the High King, who had driven the Saxons into utter rout at Mount Baden. And then she must face him, and tell him what had happened to her. It might be simpler to kill herself. Come what might, she couldn't imagine herself facing Arthur, telling him how Meleagrant had treated her. I should have fought against him harder. Arthur in battle has faced very death. Once he took a great wound which kept him abed half a year, and I stopped fighting after a few slaps and blows. She wished she had some of Morgaine's sorcery. She would turn him into a pig. But Morgaine would never have fallen into his hands. She would have guessed it was a trap, and she would have used that little dagger of hers too. She might not have killed him, but he would have lost his desire, and perhaps his ability, to ravish any woman. She had eaten and drunk what she could, washed herself, and brushed her filthy dress clean. Again the day had begun to wane. It couldn't be hoped for that she would be missed, that anyone would come for her until Meleagrant began to boast of what he had done, proclaim himself the consort of King Leodegrance's daughter. She had gone of her own free will, and properly attended by two of Arthur's companions. Not until Arthur returned from the southern shores, and perhaps not for a week or 10 days after that, when she didn't return at the appointed time, would he begin to suspect that all wasn't well. Morgaine, why didn't I listen to you? You warned me he was a villain. For a moment it seemed that she could see her sister-in-law's pale, passionless face, calm, slightly mocking, so clearly that she rubbed her eyes. Morgaine laughing at her. No, it was a trick of the light. It was gone. Would that she could see me through her magic. Perhaps she could send someone. No, she wouldn't. She hates me. She would laugh at my ill fortune. And then she remembered. Morgaine laughed and mocked, but when it was a real trouble, no one could be kinder. Morgaine had tended her when she miscarried. She had, against her own protest, been willing to try and help her with a charm. Perhaps Morgaine didn't hate her after all. Perhaps all Morgaine's mockery was a defence against Guinevere's own pride, her scorn of the sorceress of Avalon. Twilight was beginning to blur the furniture in the room. She should have thought to ask for some sort of light. Now it seemed she would spend a second night as a prisoner here, and it might be that Meleagrant would return. And at the thought she felt sick again with terror. She was still sore from his brutal treatment, her mouth swollen, bruises darkening on her shoulders, and, she supposed, on her face. And although, when she was alone here, she could think quite calmly about ways to fight him and perhaps drive him away, she knew, with a sick sinking of terror in her body, that when he touched her she would shrink away in dread and let him do whatever he would to avoid more blows. She was so afraid that he would hurt her again.
And how could Arthur forgive her for this, that she hadn't been beaten entirely into submission, but had given way like a coward after the threat of a few blows and slaps? How could he take her back as his queen and continue to love and honour her when she had allowed another man to have her? He hadn't minded when she and Lancelot... He had been a part of that. If there was sin, it wasn't all hers. She had done as her husband wished. Oh, yes, but Lancelot was his kinsman and dearest friend. There was a commotion in the courtyard. Guinevere went to the window, peering out, but she could see only that same corner of the barnyard and that same bellowing cow. Somewhere there was noise, shouting and yelling and the clash of weapons, but she couldn't see, and the sound was muffled by the walls and stairs. It might be no more than those villains of Meleagrance, fighting or brawling in the courts, or even, oh no, God forbid it, murdering her escort. She tried to crane her neck so she could see further from the slit of window, but there was nothing to see. There was a sound outside. The door flew open, and Guinevere, turning apprehensively, saw Meleagrant, a naked sword in hand. He gestured with it. "Get within, into that inner chamber," he ordered. "In with you, and not a sound from you, madam, or it'll be the worse for you." "Does this mean someone has come to rescue me?" He looked desperate, and Guinevere knew that she could get no information from him. She backed away, slowly, into the little inner room. He followed her, his hand on the sword, and Guinevere flinched, her whole body cringing in anticipation of the stroke. Would he kill her now, or hold her as hostage for his own escape? She never knew his plan. Meleagrant's head suddenly exploded in a spray of blood and brains. He crumpled with a weird slowness, and Guinevere sank down too, half fainting. But before she reached the floor, she was in Lancelot's arms. "My lady, my queen, oh, my beloved." He caught her against him, holding her, and then, half senseless, Guinevere knew he was covering her face with kisses. She made no protest. It was like a dream. Meleagrant lay in his blood on the floor. The sword lay where it had fallen. Lancelot had to lift her over the body before he could set her on her feet. How did you know?" she stammered. "Morgaine," he said tersely. "When I came to Camelot, Morgaine said she had tried to bid you delay till I was there. She felt it was a trap. I took horse and came after you with half a dozen men. I found your escort imprisoned in the woods near here, tied and gagged. Once I had freed them, it wasn't hard. No doubt he thought himself secure." Now Lancelot let her go long enough to see the bruises on her face and body, her torn gown, the cut lip where it was swollen. He touched them with shaking fingers. "Now do I regret he died so quickly," he said. "It would give me delight to make him suffer as you have suffered." "Oh, my poor love, my darling, you have been so cruelly used." "You don't know," she whispered. "You don't know." And she was sobbing again, clinging to him. "You came. You came. I thought no one would come, that no one would want me now, that no one would ever touch me again. Now, when I am so shamed." He held her, kissing her again and again in a frenzy of tenderness. "Shamed? You? No, the shame is his. His. Oh, and he has paid for it," he muttered through his kisses. "I thought I had lost you forever. He might have killed you, but Morgaine said no, you lived." Even then, Guinevere spared a moment of fear and resentment. Did Morgaine know how she had been humiliated, violated? Oh,
God, if only Morgaine need not have known. She couldn't bear it that Morgaine should know of this.
Sir Ectorius?
Sir Lucan?
Lucan is well enough. Ectorius isn't young, and he has suffered grave shock. But there is no reason to think he will not live,
Lancelot said.
You must go down, my beloved, and show yourself to them. They must know that their queen lives.
Guinevere looked at her torn gown, touched her bruised face with hesitant hands. She said, her voice catching in her throat, "Can I not have a little time to make myself proper?
I do not want them to see..."
And she couldn't go on. Lancelot hesitated, then nodded. He said,
"Yes, let them think he dared offer you no insult. It is better that way. I came alone, knowing I could match Meleagrant. The others are downstairs. Let me look in the other chambers. A man of his kind wouldn't dwell here without some woman or other."
He left her for a moment, and she could barely endure to see him out of her sight. She edged away from the body of Meleagrant on the floor, looking down at the man as if he were a wolf's carcass killed by some shepherd, without even distaste for the blood. After a moment, Lancelot returned.
"There is a room yonder which is clean, and chests there with some garments laid away. I think it was the old king's room. There is even a mirror."
He led her down the hall. This room had been swept, and the bedstraw on the big bed was fresh and clean, and there were sheets and blankets and fur comforters. Not too clean, but not disgusting either. There was a carved chest she recognized, and inside it she found three gowns, one of which she had seen Eleanor wear, and the others made for someone taller. Handling them through a mist of tears, she thought, "These must have been my own mother's. I wonder that my father never gave them to Eleanor." And then she thought, "I never knew my father well. I have no idea what manner of man he was. He was only my father." And that seemed so sad to her that she wanted to weep again. "I will put this on," she said. And then she broke into a weak laugh. "If I can manage without a woman to dress me." Lancelot touched her face gently.
"I will dress you, my lady."
He began to help her off with her gown. And then his face twisted, and he lifted her up in his arms, half-dressed as she was.
"When I think of that animal touching you," he said, with his face muffled against her breast, "and I, who love you, barely dare to lay a hand on you."
And for all her faithfulness, she had only come to this. God had rewarded her for her virtue and self-restraint by betraying her into Meleagrant's hands for rape and brutality. And Lancelot, who had offered her love and tenderness, who had scrupulously stepped aside that he might not betray his kinsman, he had to witness it. She turned in his arms, embracing him. "Lancelot," she whispered, "my love, my dearest, take away from me the memory of what was done to me. Let us not go from here yet for a little while." His eyes overflowed with tears. He laid her down gently on the bed, caressing her with shaking hands. "God did not reward me for virtue. What makes me think he could punish me?" And then a thought which frightened her. "Perhaps there is no God at all, nor any of the gods people believe in. Perhaps it is all a great lie of the priests, so that they may tell mankind what to do, what not to do, what to believe, give orders even to the king." She raised herself, pulling Lancelot down to her, her bruised mouth searching for his, her hands wandering all over the beloved body, this time without fear and without shame. She no longer cared, nor felt restraint. Arthur hadn't protected her from ravishment. She had suffered what she had had to suffer. And now, at least, she would have this much. It had been by Arthur's doing that she had first lain with Lancelot. And now she would do what she would. They rode out of Meleagrant's castle 2 hours later, side by side, their hands reaching out between their horses to touch as they rode. And Guinevere no longer cared. She looked straight at Lancelot, her head held high with joy and gladness. This was her true love, and never again would she trouble herself to hide it from any man. Chapter 5. On the shores of Avalon, the priestesses wound slowly along the reedy shore, torches in hand. I should have been among them, but there was some reason I couldn't go. Vivian would have been angry with me that I wasn't there, yet I seemed to stand on a far shore, unable to speak the word that would have brought me to them. Raven paced slowly, her pale face lined as I had never seen it, a long streak of white at the side of her temple. Her hair was unbound. Could it be that she was still maiden, untouched save by the god? Her white draperies moved in the same wind that made the torches flare. Where was Vivian? Where was the lady? The sacred boat stood at the shore of the eternal lands, but she would come no more to the place of the goddess. And who was this in the veil and wreath of the lady? I had never seen her before, save in dreams. Thick, colourless hair, the colour of ripe wheat, was braided in a low coronal over her brow. But hanging at her waist, where the sickle knife of a priestess should have hung, oh, goddess, blasphemy! For at the side of her pale gown a silver crucifix hung. I struggled against invisible bonds to rush forward and tear away the blasphemous thing. But Kevin stepped between us and held my hands in his own, which twisted and writhed like misshapen serpents. And then he was writhing between my hands, and the serpents were tearing at me with their teeth.
"Morgaine? What is it?"
Elaine shook her bedfellow's shoulder.
"What is it? You were crying out in your sleep."
"Kevin," she muttered, and sat up, her unbound hair, raven dark, moving about her like dark water.
"No, no, it wasn't you.
But she had fair hair like yours, and a crucifix."
"You were dreaming, Morgaine," Elaine said. "Wake up!"
Morgaine blinked and shuddered, then drew a long breath and looked up at Elaine with her customary composure. "I'm sorry, an evil dream," she said, but her eyes still looked haunted. Elaine wondered what dreams pursued the king's sister. For sure they must be evil, for she had come here from that evil island of witches and sorceresses.
Yet somehow Morgaine had never seemed to her an evil woman. How could any woman be so good when she worshipped devils and refused Christ?
She turned away from Morgaine and said,
"We must get up, cousin. The king will return this day. So last night's messenger said."
Morgaine nodded and got out of bed, pulling off her shift. Elaine modestly averted her eyes. Morgaine seemed to be without shame. Had she never heard that all sin came into this world through the body of a woman? Now she stood shamelessly naked, rummaging in her chest for a holiday shift, and Elaine turned away and began to dress.
"Make haste, Morgaine. We must go to the Queen."
Morgaine smiled. "Not too much haste, kinswoman. We must give Lancelot time to be well away. Guinevere wouldn't thank you for making a scandal."
"Morgaine, how can you say such a thing? After what has happened, it is no more than reason that Guinevere should be afraid to be alone at night, and should wish her champion to sleep at her very door. And indeed, it was fortunate that Lancelot came in time to save her from worse."
"Don't be more of a fool than you must, Elaine," said Morgaine with weary patience.
"Do you believe that?" "You, of course, know better by your magic,"
flared Elaine so loudly that the other women who slept in the room turned their heads to hear what the Queen's cousin and the King's sister were quarrelling about. Morgaine lowered her voice and said,
"Believe me, I want no scandal, no more than you. Guinevere is my sister-in-law, and Lancelot is my kinsman too. God knows Arthur shouldn't chide Guinevere for what befell with Meleagrant. Poor wretch, it was none of her doing, and no doubt it must be given out that Lancelot came in time to rescue her. But I have no doubt Guinevere will tell Arthur, at least in secret, how Meleagrant used her."
"No, Elaine, I saw how she was when Lancelot brought her back from the island, and I heard what she said, her terror that that damned hellhound might have managed to get her with child."
Elaine's face went dead white.
"But he is her brother," she whispered. "Is there any man alive would do such a sin as that?" "Oh, Elaine, in God's name, what a ninny you are," Morgaine said. "Is that what you think the worst of it?"
"And you are saying Lancelot has shared her bed while the king was away?"
"I'm not surprised, nor do I think it the first time," said Morgaine. "Have sense, Elaine. Do you begrudge it? After what Meleagrant did to her, I wouldn't be surprised if Guinevere would never again wish any man to touch her. And for her sake, I'm glad if Lancelot can heal that hurt for her. And now, perhaps Arthur will put her away so that he may get him a son somewhere."
Elaine said, staring at her, "Perhaps Guinevere will go into a convent. She told me once she was never happier than in her convent at Glastonbury. But would they have her if she had been paramour to her husband's captain of horse? Oh, Morgaine, I'm so ashamed of her."
"It has nothing to do with you," Morgaine said. "Why should you care?"
Elaine said, surprising herself with her outburst, "Guinevere has a husband. She is wife to the High King, and her husband is the most honourable and kindly king ever to rule these lands. She has no need to look elsewhere for love. And how can Lancelot turn away to seek any other lady if the Queen stretches out her hand?"
"Well," said Morgaine, "perhaps now she and Lancelot will go forth from this court. Lancelot has lands in Les Britain, and they have loved one another long, though I think that till this mishap they had lived as Christian man and woman." Silently she absolved herself for the lie. What Lancelot had told her in his agony was to be held for ever in the depths of her heart.
"But then would Arthur be the laughingstock of every Christian king in these islands?" said Elaine shrewdly. "If his queen should flee out of his lands with his best friend and his captain of horse, they would call him cuckold, or worse."
"I don't think Arthur will care what they say of him,"
Morgaine began. But Elaine shook her head.
"No, Morgaine, but he must care. The lesser kings must respect him so that they will rally to his standard when there is need. How can they do so when he allows his wife to live in open sin with Lancelot? Yes, I know you speak of these few days, but can we be certain it will stop at that? My father is Arthur's friend and vassal, but I think even he would mock at a king who couldn't rule his wife, and wonder how such a one could rule a kingdom."
Morgaine shrugged and said, "What can we do, short of murdering the guilty pair?"
"What talk?" said Elaine with a shudder. "No, but Lancelot must leave the court. You are his kinswoman. Cannot you make him see that?"
"Alas," said Morgaine, "I fear I have but little influence with my kinsman in that way." And inside, it was as if some cold thing seized her with its teeth.
"If Lancelot were married," said Elaine,
and suddenly it seemed as if she wrenched at her own courage.
"If he were married to me..." "Morgaine, You are wise in charms and spells. Cannot you give me a charm which will turn Lancelot's eyes from Guinevere to me? I am a king's daughter, too, and I am certainly as beautiful as Guinevere, and I at least have no husband.
Morgaine laughed bitterly. My spells, Elaine, can be worse than useless. Ask Guinevere one day how such a spell rebounded upon her.
But Elaine, she said, suddenly serious, would you truly travel that road?
I think that if he married me, Elaine said, he would come to see that I am no less worthy of love than Guinevere.
Morgaine put her hand under the young woman's chin and turned up her face.
Listen, my child, she began, and Elaine felt that the dark eyes of the sorceress were searching into her very soul.
Elaine, this would not be easy.
You have said you love him,
but love, when a maiden speaks so, is no more than a fancy.
Do you truly know what kind of a man he is? Is this a fancy which could endure for all the years of a marriage? If you wanted only to lie with him, that I could arrange easily enough. But when the glamour of the spell had worn off, he might well hate you because you had tricked him.
And what then?
Elaine said, stammering, Even that I will risk.
Morgaine, my father has offered me to other men, but he has promised me that he will never force my will. I tell you, if I cannot marry Lancelot, I shall go behind convent walls for all of my life. I swear it.
The girl's whole body trembled, but she didn't weep.
But why should I turn to you, Morgaine? Like all of us, like Guinevere herself, you would have Lancelot, whether as husband or paramour. And the king's sister may choose for herself.
Then, for a moment, Elaine thought her eyes tricked her, for in the cold eyes of the sorceress it seemed that tears gathered. Something in her voice made Elaine's eyes sting too.
Ah, no, child. Lancelot wouldn't have me, even if Arthur bade him.
Believe me, Elaine, you would have small happiness with Lancelot.
Elaine said, I do not think women have ever much happiness in marriage. Only young girls think so, and I'm not so young. But a woman must marry some time or other, and I would rather have Lancelot.
Then she burst out,
I don't think you can do anything of the sort. Why do you mock me? Are your charms and spells all moonlight rubbish, then?
She had expected Morgaine to flare up at her, to defend her own craft, but Morgaine sighed and shook her head and said,
I put not much faith in love charms and spells. I told you that when first we spoke. They are for concentrating the will of the ignorant. The craft of Avalon is a very different thing, and not likely to be invoked because a maiden would rather lie with one man than another.
Oh, it is ever so with the craft of the wise, Elaine burst out scornfully. I could do thus or thus, but I will not, because it wouldn't be right to meddle in the work of the gods, or the stars aren't right, or what have you.
Morgaine sighed, a heavy sound. Kinswoman, I can give you Lancelot for husband, if that is truly what you desire. I do not think it will make you happy, but you are so far wise. You have said that you expect not happiness in marriage. Believe me, Elaine, I want nothing more to see Lancelot well wedded and away from this court and from the queen. Arthur is my brother, and I would not see shame brought upon him as soon or late it must be. But you are to remember that you asked me for this. See that you do not whimper when it turns to bitterness.
I swear I will abide whatever comes if I can have him for husband, Elaine said.
But why would you do this, Morgaine? Is it simply out of spite for Guinevere?
Believe that if you will, or believe I love Arthur too well to see scandal destroy what he has wrought here, Morgain said steadily. And bear in mind, Elaine, charms seldom work as you expect they will. When the gods had set their will, what did it matter what any mortal did, even with charms and spells? Vivien had set Arthur on the throne. Yet the goddess had done her own will, and not Vivian's, for she had denied Arthur any son by his queen. And when she, Morgain, had sought to remedy what the goddess had left undone, the rebound of that charm had thrown Guinevere and Lancelot together into this scandalous love. Well, that at least she could remedy by making it sure that Lancelot made an honourable marriage. And Guinevere, too, was trapped. She would be glad, perhaps, of something to break this deadlock. Her mouth twitched a little in something that wasn't quite a smile.
Beware, Elaine. There is a wise saying. Have a care what you pray for. It might be given you. I can give you Lancelot for husband, but I will ask a gift in return.
What can I give you that you would value, Morgain? You care not for jewels that I have seen.
I want neither jewels nor riches, Morgain said. Only this.
You will bear Lancelot children, for I have seen his son.
And she stopped, feeling her skin prickle all the way up her spine, as when the sight came upon her. Elaine's blue eyes were wide with wonder. She could almost hear Elaine's thought.
So it is true, then, and I will have Lancelot for husband and give him children.
Yes, it is true, though I did not know until I spoke. If I work within the sight, then I am not meddling with what should be left to the goddess, and so the way will be made clear for me.
I will say nothing of your son, Morgain said steadily. He must do his own fate.
She shook her head to clear it of the strange darkness of the sight.
I ask only that you give me your first daughter to be schooled at Avalon.
Elaine's eyes were wide. In sorcery?
Lancelot's own mother was High Priestess of Avalon, Morgain said. I will bear no daughter for the goddess. If through my doing you give Lancelot the son which every man craves, you must swear to me. Swear by your own god that you will send me your daughter for fostering.
The room seemed full of a ringing silence. At last Elaine said, If all this comes to pass, and I have Lancelot's son, then I swear you shall have his daughter for Avalon. I swear it by the name of Christ, she said, and made the sign of the cross.
Morgain nodded.
And in turn I swear, she said, that she shall be as the daughter I shall never bear to the goddess, and that she shall avenge a great wrong.
Elaine blinked. A great wrong? Morgain, what are you speaking of?
Morgain swayed a little. The ringing silence in the room was broken. She was aware of the sound of rain outside the windows and of a chill in the chamber. She frowned and said,
I do not know. My mind wandered.
Elaine, this thing cannot be done here. You must beg leave to go and see your father, and you must make certain that I am invited to go and bear you company. I will see to it that Lancelot is there. She drew a long breath and turned to take up her gown. And as for Lancelot, we must by now have given him time to be gone from the Queen's chamber. Come, Guinevere will be awaiting us. And indeed, when Elaine and Morgain reached the Queen, there was no sign of the presence there of Lancelot or any other man. But once, when Elaine was for a moment beyond earshot, Guinevere met Morgain's eyes, and Morgain thought she had never seen such awful bitterness.
You despise me, do you not, Morgain?
For once, Morgain thought,
Guinevere has voiced the question that has been in her thoughts all these weeks.
She felt like hurling back a sharp answer. If I do so, is it not because you have first despised me?
But she said as gently as she could, I am not your confessor, Guinevere, and you, not I, are the one who professes belief in a god who will damn you because you share your bed with a man who is not your husband. My goddess is gentler with women.
He should have been...
Guinevere burst out, then stopped herself and said, Arthur is your brother. In your eyes he can do no wrong.
I said not that.
Morgaine couldn't bear the wretchedness in the younger woman's face. Guinevere, my sister, none has accused you. But Guinevere turned away. She said between clenched teeth,
No,
and I want not your pity either, Morgaine.
Want it, or want it not, it is yours, Morgaine thought.
But she didn't put the thought into words. She wasn't a healer to probe old wounds and make them bleed. Are you ready to break your fast, Guinevere? What will you choose to eat?
More and more in this court, since there is no war, it is as if I were her servant, and she nobler than I.
It was, Morgaine thought dispassionately, a game they all played, and she didn't begrudge it to Guinevere.
But there were in this kingdom noblewomen who might, and she liked it not either, that Arthur assumed that his old companions should now be his personal attendants, even though they might be kings or lords in their own right. At Avalon she had willingly served Vivian, because the old woman was the living representative of the goddess, and her wisdom and magical powers put her almost beyond the human. But she had known, too, that the same powers were available to her, if she would work seriously to attain them. And a day would come when she would have the reverence, too, if she took on the power of the goddess. But for a war leader of the land, or for his consort, no, such powers were not suitable, except in war itself. And it angered her that Arthur should keep his court in such state, assuming a power which should belong only to the greatest druids and priestesses. Arthur bears the sword of Avalon still, and if he keeps not his oath to Avalon, they will require it at his hands. And then it seemed to Morgaine that the room grew still all around her, and seemed to open itself out as if everything were very far away. She could still see Guinevere, her mouth half open to speak, but at the same time it seemed she could see through the woman's body, as if she were in the fairy kingdom. Everything seemed, all at once, distant and small, and looming over her, and there was a deep silence within her head. In that silence she saw the walls of a pavilion, and Arthur sleeping with Excalibur naked in his hand. And she bent over him. She couldn't take the sword, but with Vivian's little sickle knife she cut the strings that bound the scabbard to his waist. It was old now, the velvet frayed, and the precious metal of the embroideries dulled and tarnished. Morgaine took the scabbard in her hand, and then she was on the shores of a great lake with the sound of reeds washing around over her.
I said, No, I do not want any wine. I'm weary of wine for breakfast, Guinevere remarked. Perhaps Elaine could find some new milk in the kitchens.
Morgaine, have you gone into a swoon?
Morgaine blinked and stared at Guinevere. Slowly she came back, trying to focus her eyes. None of it was true. She wasn't riding madly along the shores of a lake with a scabbard in her hand. Yet all this place had the look of the fairy world, as if she saw everything through rippling water. And it was somehow like a dream she had had once, if she could only remember. And even while she assured the other woman that she was quite all right, promising to go herself to the dairy for fresh milk if there was none in the kitchen, still her mind led her through the labyrinths of the dream. If she could only remember what it was that she had dreamed, all would be well. But as she went down into the fresh air, cool even in summer, she felt no longer as if this world might melt at any moment into the world of fairy. Her head ached as if it had been split asunder, and all that day she was held captive by the strange spell of her waking dream. If only she could remember! She had flung Excalibur into the lake. That was it, so that the fairy queen might not have it. No, that wasn't it either. And her mind would begin again to try and unreel the strange obsessive path of her dream. But past noon, when the sun was falling toward evening, she heard the horns announcing Arthur's arrival, and felt the stir which ran all through Camelot. With the other women, she ran out to the earthworks at the edge of the heights, and watched the royal party riding toward them, banners flying. Guinevere was trembling at her side. She was taller than Morgaine, but somehow, with her slender, pale hands, and the fragility of her narrow shoulders, it seemed to Morgaine that Guinevere was only a child. A tall, lanky child, nervous at some imaginary mischief, which must be punished. She touched Morgaine's sleeve with her trembling hand. "Sister, must my lord know it is done, and Meleagrant is dead? There is no reason for Arthur to make war on anyone. Why should he not think that my lord Lancelot reached me in time to prevent—" Her voice was only a thin treble like a little girl's, and she couldn't speak the words. "Sister," said Morgaine, "it is for you to tell, or not."
"But if he heard it elsewhere?"
Morgaine sighed. Could not Guinevere have said for once what she meant? "If Arthur hears aught to distress him, he will not hear it from me, and there is no other has the right to speak. But he cannot lay it to your charge that you were trapped and beaten into submission." And then she knew, as if she had heard it, the voice of a priest speaking to the trembling Guinevere. Was it now, or when Guinevere was a child, saying that no woman was ever ravished save she had tempted some man to it, as Eve had led our first father Adam into sin, that the holy virgin martyrs of Rome had willingly died rather than lay down their chastity? It was this made Guinevere tremble. Somewhere in her mind, dismiss it how she might, or try to smother the knowledge in Lancelot's arms, she truly believed it was her fault, that she merited death for the sin of having lived to be ravaged. And since she hadn't died first, Arthur had the right to kill her for it. No reassurances would ever quiet that voice in Guinevere's mind. "She feels this guilt over Meleagrant, so that she need feel none for what she has done with Lancelot." Guinevere was shivering at her side, despite the warm sun.
"I would he were here, that we might go indoors. Look, there are hawks flying in the sky. I'm afraid of hawks. Always I'm afraid they will swoop down on me."
"They would find you too big and tough a mouthful, I'm afraid, sister," Morgaine said amiably.
Servants were heaving at the great gates, opening them for the royal party to ride through. Sir Ectoria still limped heavily from the night he had spent imprisoned in the cold, but he came forward at Kai's side, and Kai, as keeper of his castle, bowed before Arthur.
"Welcome home, my lord and king."
Arthur dismounted and came to embrace Kai.
"This is an overly formal welcome to my home, Kai, you rascal. Is all well here?"
"All is well here now, my lord," said Ectorius. "But once again you have cause to be grateful to your captain."
"True,"
said Guinevere, coming forward, her hand laid lightly in Lancelot's.
"My lord and king, Lancelot saved me from a trap laid by a traitor, saved me from such a fate as no Christian woman should suffer."
Arthur laid one hand in his queen's, and the other in that of his captain of horse.
"I am, as always, grateful to you, my dear friend, and so is my wife. Come,
We shall speak about this in private."
And moving between the two of them, he went up the steps into the castle.